Welcome to The Bench on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, featuring John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
I love being around them.
Get involved by phone at 713-780-3776. Now coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, the kings of Houston sports radio, John and Lance.
Well, good Tuesday morning, everybody, on this holiday week. John and Lance. Lance is in. I don't want to say where he is because he's giving out the Joe Moore Award today. Right? Is that today, Lance?
Yeah, that's today.
You're giving it out today.
Let's just say I got in no matter what the time zone, no matter where I am. It was already a late flight and that was going to get in late, and then we got delayed another hour, and then I had to drive from the airport I had to Uber a decent distance to the hotel, and I found out, because it was a little late when I got in, the guy told me, he said, yeah, he goes, if I weren't here, you might not have a ride for another half an hour. I just happened to be here looking for a ride because I took a 3.5 hour trip from here to a city 3.5 hours from here, and he said, I couldn't take one back from that city to this one because they're in different states, and I'm not licensed in that state. So I decided I wanted to get one more ride before I went home. And so I was like, wow, I might not have had a ride to my hotel that late when I've got to do the show, knowing tomorrow morning full well that my head coach is also my general manager. Okay.
Well, I said this last week, and I got – a little bit lit up because I had said that Coach Cully was a puppet, right?
And who did you get lit up by?
I got lit up by someone. John, a puppet, that's a grown man. And you know what? He is. David Cully's a grown man. But
he's also a
junkie. Puppet. Yeah, he's a junkie too.
But he's also a puppet. No. You can be a grown man and a puppet too.
And a junkie. You can be all of those things. But
it's a puppet regime.
I'm going to tell you about David Cully, who's a junkie.
I don't want to say puppet, though, because it's a little disrespectful. No, 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 no. You're a little out of line yourself.
No, you're not.
You insulted him a little bit. You got a little out of order yourself.
Yes.
You're not out of order and you're not out of line because he was installed. Have you ever heard of the term, and you have, a puppet regime?
Yeah. Yeah.
That means when somebody is installed as a dictator or a leader, but someone else behind the scenes is the actual, you know, is the actual person in power. That's not accurate. You're not accurate.
It can't be more accurate because David Cully yesterday, for those of you who didn't hear, David Cully we're talking about making in-game decisions. And he said this, I believe, the day before, too, as he says, or no. He said, I'm getting better at this whole coaching thing, head coaching thing.
Right.
Here he is talking about making in-game decisions.
Well, just like I go back to the two-minute situation when we're in it, I immediately went online with Nick, and obviously he and Romeo talked about it and says, okay, our timeouts now. How do we need to use these timeouts? You know, and then immediately, okay, at this, you know, depending on what happened on this play, we need to call it. If this doesn't happen, then don't call a timeout. So all those things are discussed before we ever get to that point. Like, we're usually a play ahead of that. And then when it happens, then I've got to be ready to make that decision. And that's usually Aaron with all those kinds of decisions, you know.
That is a little disheartening to hear him say that. During the game, he gets on the headset with Romeo Crennel and Nick Caserio, and they discuss – what is going to happen now? He goes back to which?
This
game?
Is worse.
This one's even worse.
Patriot game.
Yeah, to the Patriot game. Aaron, play this one because this is so unbelievable that this is going on. Hold on, Aaron's getting it. But this is so unbelievable that a head coach is now. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, I believe Mickey Loomis in New Orleans has been on the headsets before,
And maybe so.
Maybe so. I think
it's legal.
It's legal to be on the headset now, because I was listening to Jeremy, and I hadn't heard David Culley's I hadn't heard his press conference, but Paul Gallant was on with Jeremy yesterday, and the Killer Bees taking over for and they were talking about, hey, Nick is on the is talking to David Culley, and I sent them Ray Farmer got suspended because he was texting during a game. He was texting the head coach. Illegal. Who was the head coach of the Browns? Who was it? Freddie Kitchens?
Hugh.
No, it was before.
Was it Hugh?
It was Hugh. I think it was Hugh.
Yeah.
He was texting him, and he was texting Hugh during the game, and then the league found out, and they suspended him 4 games. So I said, Paul, the general manager can't talk to the coach during the game. Look at this suspension by Ray Farmer. And they were like, oh, my gosh, yeah, well, did we mishear that? And they played these sound bites again, and I said, oh, my gosh, are you kidding me? He's on the head. Nick Caserio is on the headset. Here's further explanation of what's been going on.
I go back again to the New England game. I can remember just like it was yesterday that the conversation went, let him score. I mean, I heard the conversation, and then all of a sudden it didn't compute to me at that time. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden now from that point on, I've learned that to be ahead of those things. And when you're ahead of those things like that, you're much better to make those decisions. That means you're going to make the right decision, but when you make that decision, you're pretty sure about making that decision.
So wait a minute. Two things there. First of all, they're on the headsets. Now, I will tell you this. I know head coaches that are like, shut up. I'm thinking here, so shut up. Not only is it not shut up, he's listening in, and then it didn't even compute, he said. They said, let them score, and he didn't even understand what they were saying.
It's so damning in so many ways.
Oh, my gosh. This is awful. This is how the team is being run on the field. I'm going to tell you this. I thought that David Culley would make it past this. I don't think so anymore. First of all, he doesn't. He keeps on saying stuff that he shouldn't say. I mean, he got in trouble before the season started about Deshaun Watson because he was we're making the decision. Then all of a sudden the media was like, "What decision are you guys making? What is this decision? Are you guys talking about this? What do you guys say?" And it was like, "I'm not saying another word." Caserio told him, "Hey, what are you doing? Saying anything about Deshaun? Stop." Don't say another word. Okay. So now he's telling everyone that Nick Caserio is up there pulling the strings during the game. Holy crap. And then that he doesn't even understand what he's saying.
Let me tell you something. David Culley uses his inside voice all the time on the outside.
Yes.
All the time. And it's unbelievable. Here's what was shocking yesterday, just to make sure that you guys recognize what we're talking about. Number one, that the general manager is in active conversations along with consultant Romeo Crennel on a headset that the head coach listens to in order to take direction on how to manage the game and coach the game. Now, I don't know if this happened because early in the year they figured out he didn't know what he was doing. But I don't think so, because they go to the Patriot game like it's, clearly something happened for them to either start doing it or this has been this way from the beginning. People in the NFL, when the name David Culley when David Culley was hired, eventually more than one person in the NFL said to me when I asked about this, because he wasn't mentioned anywhere. One guy goes, David Culley. I knew that guy as, coach. Like, that's the guy I call coach. I wasn't sure his name, but he's been around for years. Nicest guy in the world. I mean, I'd never hire him as a head coach, but a coach is great. And I said, he goes, no, I don't know how he's being considered for head coach, but he's a great guy, and you guys are going to really like him. The other, that person and another person said, I guarantee this hiring was just because Nick Caserio wants to be a head coach. He's always wanted to be he's been a coach. He was a receivers coach for the Patriots. When I went out there to practice, he would sit with position groups and almost feel like he was hands-on with the position groups. I thought he wanted a weak head coach that he wouldn't get any slack from and he could, be the top dog. They were right. Nick Caserio wanted to instill a head coach or install a head coach that he could really have control over in the sense that he was going to be involved in in-game decision-making. And then David Culley says, I'm listening on the headphones and Romeo and Nick are talking about this. Like, David Culley is not, I don't even think he's the guy pulling the official trigger. He's just listening to the, to two guys who aren't even coaches, but it is legal, by the way, if they're in a coaching box, if they're in a press box somewhere, a coaching box. I had to get clarification on that yesterday. Mark Ross, who's former general manager who, or player personnel director for the New York Giants, is going to join us, a little bit later in the show on the 9 o'clock hour. He is, or actually the 8 o'clock hour, at 8 o'clock, he is now with the XFL, John. He is one of the general managers of the XFL when they come back. But he's like, this doesn't, that doesn't happen. Like, that's not a great thing for David Culley. And then the second thing, of course, and I almost feel like the less damning thing than Nick Caserio and Romeo making game management decisions, John, is the fact that David Culley was like, admitted out loud, boy, I had no idea. I didn't even understand this whole letting them score thing, but I'm learning on the go. Like, I feel like I know that now. Like, I couldn't believe he would say that out. And I feel bad for him personally because I just don't think he knows, shouldn't admit that.
Well, did you guys listen to the actual press conference? I know you guys get the transcripts. Did you listen to the audio?
No.
Because that happened probably about a third of the way into the press conference yesterday. And then multiple questions came from media members who still kind of sounded confounded of, did you really just say you allow Nick Caserio in your ears to tell you what, like, every time they had a follow-up question like that, it was kind of, you could tell when they were staring at their laptops going, what in the world did he just admit to?
And it's, it, he just, listen, he's got diarrhea of the mouth and sometimes apparently constipation of the brain. This is a problem, people. This is, I thought coach would last, and this is too damning because he's like a little kid that just blurts out stuff that you're supposed to keep in the family and secrets. He continues. Here's another example of him talking yesterday about this.
There's nothing that has happened in this league, Sarah, that we've talked about that he hasn't gone through, or that myself hadn't gone through, and with different perspectives on what we would have done if we were in that particular situation, or if he was in a situation that I was in, just being able to bounce off each other, those situations and real life situations, things that have actually happened. And not only the good things, but the mistakes that we've made along the way during those things. But just being able to have that experience and knowing that there's really nothing that's going to happen in a ball game that we haven't seen before, or he hasn't seen before. And then we basically decide what's best for us during that particular situation to do and make those decisions. And that's been very helpful for me.
This is that he didn't know that you to let them score, what that meant as a head football, like a football lifer. I mean, you watch games. I mean, how long? I mean, we're not even in the business, and we're like, hey, that's dumb. Let him score. Or at the one, take a knee. Or, you know, these situations he doesn't understand, and he's got the general manager in his ear. Holy crap. When we come back, Tyler Oberle. And we'll talk about, actually, letting people score. We'll talk about going for it on fourth down. We'll talk about analytics with a guy who did analytics, actually, for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. He is was their director of analytics. So Tyler Oberle will join us next right here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. In the meantime, let's get a kid a car.
Yeah, Cars for Kids is not – okay, once again, John always says that, but they're not going to give a kid a car. I just want to make sure you guys know. I had somebody reach out and ask, hey, I'd love to get some help. There's a young kid I'd like to help. He needs a car. I said, okay, that's – not what Cars for Kids does, what they do. They take donations of cars, trucks, motorcycles, SUVs, doesn't matter. Whether it's running or it's not running, they take that donation from you. They'll come and haul the vehicle off, whether it's running or not running. It's fine with them either way. And they'll get it off your property. Then they go through an auction process. They take the money raised, and they work with Houston Can Academy locally to help fund their program to get kids a second chance at an education. So I can't get you a car. car, but I can get you a second chance at a diploma if that's what you need. And that's what Cars for Kids does through working with Houston Can Academy. Make sure that you start the process of getting the vehicle hauled off your property. Get a tax write-off before the end of the year. Write off the car and not the kid with carsforkids.org.
This is The Bench. The Bench on ESPN 97.5. On ESPN 97.5. Welcome back to The Bench with John Granato and Lance Erline on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Huntley takes the snap. He'll roll to the right. Pumps, throws. Broken up, incomplete.
Okay, that was on Sunday. That was John Harbaugh going for two to win the game. Now, we've seen him do that a couple of times, and he's lost both times. We saw Brandon Staley on Thursday night going for it multiple times and not making it, as opposed to taking field goals. Tyler Oberle is joining us right now. He's the former director of analytics for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and he's the director of analytics right now for the Connor Group. So he's joining us right now to talk about this stuff. Tyler, welcome to the show. How are you?
Good. Hey, John. Hey, Wayne. How are we doing?
Doing great, man. Okay, so there is a head coach in Iowa, a high school coach, who never punts, and he wins multiple. He's got multiple state championships. I think it's Iowa, Indiana, wherever he is. I don't know. But he wins all the time, and he says, if you're going to give me four downs, why would I only take three of them? Now we've seen it most of the season. There's a proliferation of coaches now in the NFL that used to be so conservative, but now they say it feels like they're going for it all the time. Who's right?
So on a fourth and one situation, it's very dependent based on the team, but the examples you just gave, John, leading in, so Baltimore Ravens, the Chargers, I'll even throw the Colts in there. It's a part of their identity, and it's a piece of who they are as an offense. If you go strictly by the numbers, yes, even back on the backside, let's say at the minus 30 in a fourth and one situation, or the minus 40, like the Colts ended up doing in the second quarter in the Patriots game, the numbers are telling you to go for it. Especially if you're going to run like a quarterback sneak or something along those lines. By and large, you want to stick to, and over the course of the season, if you bear out the numbers are going to work in your favor. And that's what those coaches have decided to do. Now they're starting to get called out and the magnifying glass is going to focus in a little bit more on those decisions.
Yeah, and I think that's so what's interesting, Tyler, is can you go through the process of what was digested to come to the conclusion mathematically of how these decisions should be made? Because my dad told me a story that when he was at University of Houston, and I want to say this is in the early 80s, very early 80s, 1981, a guy from the local a guy who was, I think, a trainer who was also a mathematician and studying for, I don't know if he was going to be an engineer, he came to my dad with a report that said basically that team should be going for it most of the time and not punting. And this is like 81. He said, can you bring this to Coach Bill Yeoman? My dad said, absolutely not. I cannot bring this to Bill Yeoman. But he read through it and he found it fascinating. But even back then, I guess there has been mathematic work done to show that that is the statistical play.
Well, let's just break it down very simply. The object of football is what? It's to score. It's to score points. And the only way you're going to score points is primarily if you have the ball on offense and or, a pick six or something, scoop the ball up defensively and take it back. In the NFL, you have 10 to 12 possessions a game on average for the offense. So you have to maximize those possessions. When you automatically punt, you're giving away that possession and that opportunity to score. So if you start with that framework and the basis of football, number one, your object's to score. And so that's where you try to put the numbers in your favor offensively to maximize that possession that you have at that point in time. And we can get into specific examples. The Ravens live and die, for example, by the two-point conversion. I agreed with the two-point conversion Sunday against the Packers. In part, they had to claw their way back, all the way back. You have your backup quarterback. You're going to go into overtime. What's the likelihood that they win the toss and win in overtime. You know, I would say it's less than 50%. Now, in the other Ravens two-point conversion game against the Steelers, in that instance, they're the better team. The Ravens are, specifically against the Steelers. And I actually thought, and this is where you would game plan specific to your opponent going into the game, and you would have a specific plan set up is what we would do, is what we did with the Bucs. You know, in the Ravens-Steelers game, that instance, I actually would have played for overtime. You have the better team. What's the likelihood the Steelers are going to come down and score a touchdown against you to beat you? I'll take my chances, have my defense stop the Steelers, and then at that point, all I need is a field goal to win the game, and I have the best field goal kicker in the NFL to do it. So that's where it does get specific to the game, to the opponent, to the situation. And your analytics staff, I think this is where the misconception comes in, that people think, and I always hear on the other side, well, you can't account for this situation or this, you know, blah, blah, blah. Yes, we do. Going into the game, we break down who the opponent is, what their strengths and weaknesses are, and then who we are, what are our strengths, what are our weaknesses. And that all goes into part of the game plan set up for that opponent in that given week.
Hmm. Tyler Oberle with us here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, talking analytics. Hey, can't you make the argument that if you're the better team, why would you leave it up to a coin toss to win the game?
Yeah, and you can flip back and forth, right, on that final two-point conversion, especially if you have Lamar Jackson back there.
Right.
You know, that's where it can really go back and forth. I just lean to offensively, defensively. You know, the Steelers have not been able to score points this year, for example. And so in that specific example, whereas the Packers, like, I don't want Aaron Rodgers, even on a coin toss, I just don't want to give the ball back to Aaron Rodgers. Whereas yeah. In the Steelers game in that instance, hey, I'm willing to live with even a 50-50 coin toss because I still believe I can stop them because they need to score a touchdown. Even if they win the toss, they need to score a touchdown to win. I'll bank on my probability and my likelihood that I'm going to be able to stop him and then give the ball, you know, set it up for Justin Tucker to win it. So that's where it can get. And look, there's a lot of the analytics guys that would disagree with me in that instance. But, you know, again, we're talking about 55%. This isn't like a 90% chance, right? There's still a 45% chance on the other side that you're wrong, that you know, it doesn't work in your favor, right? But what you're doing is you're trying to maximize those percentages.
This is my problem with some of the, and I'm probably talking more about people I hear discuss this on Twitter, is that I feel like, unlike baseball and basketball, I think football is much more fluid and much less static when it comes to decision-making. And you just went through, I thought gave a perfect example of the Ravens-Steelers versus Ravens-Packers of how you have to look at those situations differently. I want to ask you, go back, though. You say the idea of every possession is to score points. The Chargers had three opportunities to score points, and they passed on each one of them to try to go for it on fourth down. I thought analytics took a hit with some of Brandon Staley's decision-making there because this isn't the same Kansas City Chiefs team we've seen in the past offensively, and it's not the same quarterback. What were your thoughts on not kicking field goals since that is technically taking points?
Yeah, so two of the three fourth down attempts that they took, Lance, were inside the five-yard line. And if you just convert on one of those two opportunities, you walk away with theoretically more, you know, you walk away with the same or more points, right? On a touchdown, you get 6 points and then plus the extra point. So you actually walk away with 7 points. There's a chance you miss the extra point. But all you got to do is convert one of those two instances. And in one instance, they're at the fourth, you know, they're at the 1 yard line. And they didn't get it. Now, hats off to the Chiefs converting. The other one was the Donald Parham, you know, where the injury occurred. So, you just got to convert on one of those two opportunities, and you're walking away with the same, actually more points than if you were to sit there and kick the field goals on both. So I'm 100% going for it, especially when you're within the 5 yard line in those instances.
How confident? I mean, so these are decisions that have to be made on the fly. Although, you know before you go into the game, I'm playing Aaron Rodgers as opposed to I'm playing Ben Roethlisberger, you know, as opposed to, you know, I need a bunch of points against the Kansas City Chiefs. Staley, you know, his argument was solid in that I need it, but we feel like, especially early in the game, we feel like we need more points against the Kansas City Chiefs. I get that. How do you feel about your head coach if he doesn't even understand what it means when he's told on the headset to let the other team score? How do you feel? How confident are you in your head coach then?
It's a pretty interesting, you know, process being on the analytics side when you have a coach who's all in the case of Brandon Staley, and he's going for it all the way, or the opposite, where it's super conservative, and they don't even want to play the numbers. As a matter of fact, then they're going to go and just start making these random decisions at random times based on what they, I guess, gut or instinct. And and that's a lot, honestly, more difficult to explain away on those gut decisions than it is in just sticking to the numbers. And at least going in, like I said, so I'll just give a high-level example. Every Tuesday, so it'd be on a day like today, going into your opponent's week, we would have a breakdown that we present for the opponent. Here's what the opponent's strengths, weaknesses are, and then here's our overall breakdown of go-for-it situations. So we've identified, while the coaching staff is setting up their game plan for the week, here are the go-for-it situations. You know, within the five-yard line, it's automatic go for it in fourth downs. If we're, you know, for example, in that kind of mid-range between the 50 to the 35, do you go for it or not? You know, on a fourth and three or less, we're going to go for it. But if it's a fourth and four or higher, then we're going to go ahead and kick the field goal, for example, or punt. So that's where you would have a breakdown, a go for it situation with the coach. You walk through it with them, let them ask questions. Now, does the coach follow it out and execute on Sundays? That's where it's 100% dependent upon that coach. And what we're seeing is some coaches are 100% on board. They're going for it. You know, Frank Reich with the Colts, for example, it was a ballsy move, I'll even say, when they're up 14 points, second quarter, fourth and one at the 40-yard line, and they lined up to go for it. And at that point in time, which the numbers tell you to do, I was surprised because
all Tyler,
they were up going for you. They're up 14-0 if you get stopped in that situation, and then all of a sudden the Patriots go down and score. It's 14-7 game. You know, everything was rolling in that moment in time for the Colts. And then what did they do? QB sneak right behind Quentin Nelson, which they did three times that game, 3 for 3. They went down the field, kicked the field goal. They're now 17-0. So, you know, but again, it comes down to the identity of the coach and what they believe in. And the example of Brandon Staley, Frank Reich, and the Colts, like, they're going to live and die by this identity. And so we'll see how far it takes them throughout the rest of the season.
They had 5 minutes in the game to go with a 10-point lead and went for it on their own side of the field on fourth down instead of punting and just grinding out the clock. And John, you remember famously when you and I were talking about the Colts when they decided we don't want to tie the Texans in post in overtime. We would rather lose going for it on fourth down on our own side than tie.
Right. Well, that was a – you know what? We see it more often now. That's an example of getting it. And but we see it more. John Harbaugh – I mean, I can't remember recently – you know, Tom Osborne did it against Miami and won a national championship. But I don't remember it happening too often where you go for two at the end of the game and win. It just seems like it happens over and over and over that guys are losing games.
You're right, John. I will say this. So there's one thing on the decision. You can criticize the decision of going for it or not. And then the second piece is the play call, right? So I will say the sprint right rollout that the Ravens ran, I know specifically for the Bucs when I was there, I actually did a study on sprint right rollout. I hate that play. I absolutely hate that play. It never works. For us in the Bucs, we were like 1 of 18 in converting. You know, so criticize the decision to go for it, criticize the play. I think there's two different pieces to that element.
That said, he was Tyler. I've watched it multiple times. Devin Duvernay is wide open in the back of the end zone.
In the backside of the end zone. Right. He was
backside, and he ran across the field, and he's wide open. But Huntley was just zoomed in. It never took his eyes off Andrews.
Well, that's a human element you have to factor
that's
in.
True.
Because Mark Andrews is the guy. Travis Kelce is going to be the guy you look at if you're the Chiefs. There's certain guys that you're already pre-snapped. The human element has to be factored in, and that's the thing I don't think is taken into account enough in football. More than anything, decision making is going to have human element built into it. Hey, Tyler, before we let you go, tell John the story of your first year with the Tampa Bay Bucks. you're in a league in 2014 that's not very forward from an analytics and that type of thinking standpoint. You're helping to evaluate the talent. Your first year in the NFL, and it's the 2014 draft. Tell them how you had the board and what was the reaction of the coaches in your locker room at that time.
So we were sitting with the number 7 pick in the 2014 draft. The number 1 player in my model at the time was Aaron Donald. And we just gave Gerald McCoy a big contract extension at that moment in time. And so the number 2 player on my board was Khalil Mack. And that was, you know, obviously Jadeveon Clowney sitting up there as the number 1 player in that class. My recommendation was, hey, let's actually trade back, because draft day, fast forward, there was an opportunity for us to take a trade back from like 7 to 10, pick up an extra pick, and end up taking Aaron Donald. He ended up falling, obviously, and the Rams took him. And then what we would have done in the second round was actually we had Devontae Adams as the targeted receiver in the second round pick for the receiver. So, yeah, in retrospect, hey, Mike Evans is going to go down, potentially Hall of Famer. He is the best offensive weapon in the history of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. He's broken all the receiving records. So it ended up working out all right. And I absolutely love Mike Evans. Great player. But, yeah, I think we probably would have taken Devontae Adams in the second round with Aaron Donald in the first.
That would have been bad. That would have been good, bro.
How did those coaches, by the way, like you recommending a 280-pound defensive tackle at that time?
You know what, though? He actually was perfect for Lovie Smith's defense as the under, as the three technique. So, and then we would have been able to slide him out as the left end. So specific to Lovie's defense, and at the time, he would have been a perfect fit, absolutely perfect scheme fit for us. The big thing was we just signed Gerald McCoy to that huge $100 million deal. And so all of a sudden draft a defensive tackle at the same position. That was primarily the reason why we decided
that. That makes some sense. And Gerald McCoy was playing great at the time. So
he was right in his peak. Yeah.
But did you see Clowney knock that guy's helmet off in the bowl game, though, John?
I saw that.
You know how much that's worth for analytics? That's a plus 10 on analytics. Well, knocking a helmet off.
We're out of here. Tyler, thanks so much for joining us. We appreciate it. It's Tyler Oberle right here on ESPN 97.5. Good stuff. We appreciate you hanging with us. We'll get back to how you really should decide whether or not to go for two. When we come back, we'll tell you how real coaches do it when we come back. But right now, we're talking about the Golden Nugget in Lake Charles. I am so excited. Actually, I made reservations for the girls yesterday to go get massages at the Golden Nugget. So they've got the spa there for the ladies. I mean, just can't be any better. And they've got, when you go and you look at all the stuff that you, holy cow, is it awesome. And the ladies love that. They can get their nails, the pedis, the facials. They can get all of that stuff done there. And they love it, guys. Love it. There is something for everybody at the Golden Nugget in Lake Charles. Even the kids with the pool and the lazy river. And, you know, you can bring the kids there and just have a good time. It's so, so, so good. The restaurants are unbelievable. The hotel rooms are perfect. Everything can't be better. They got 3 towers of hotel rooms that are just awesome. The best casino. It's a Las Vegas-style casino. And now they've got the sports book as well. You have everything you could possibly want at the Golden Nugget in Lake Charles. We're headed there next week and just can't wait. I just am so excited to go. You will be too. You're looking for a great getaway for the whole family. It's the Golden Nugget in Lake Charles, just 2 hours and 15 minutes down the road. You don't have to fly to Vegas. It's right here at the Golden Nugget Lake Charles.
This is Heisman Trophy winner, College Football Hall of Famer Eddie George, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.
The Kings are on the air. This is The Bench with John Granato and Lance Erline on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John and Lance.
For those of you just joining us here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, it was yesterday in the press conference with the Houston Texans, Coach Culley not only admitted, but he explained everything that's going on. With the headsets, Nick Caserio and Romeo Cornell are on the headsets explaining stuff to him during games. This is just so unbelievable that a head coach in the NFL, has got to get the general manager's input to make decisions on the field. I don't know that there's another example of this going on in the NFL. Such I don't want to be ugly here. But here's how this is. John Harbaugh of the Ravens was mic'd up during the game on Sunday. Listen to John Harbaugh. The first sound you'll hear is him over talking to Tyler Huntley, who's sitting on the bench. And then you'll get the in-game stuff that goes on. And then over at the sideline, he calls a timeout after Huntley scores the touchdown. He'll call a timeout, and he'll bring the players over. And he's got Huntley over first, and then he brings Mark Andrews over. He's got Murray and Huntley, and then he brings Mark Andrews over. So that's the scene. Here's John Harbaugh mic'd up on Sunday.
Now, when we score the second touchdown, you want me to go for two and try to win right there? You want to go to overtime? Go for two and win right there? You'll make the play?
Huntley with a snap from the gun. Steps up. Now he'll run. He's to the 5-1 touchdown! Tyler Huntley! He's done it again!
Do we want to kick it or go for it? What do you all think? Now, we can kick this and go to overtime, and we're in good shape. Or we try to win it here, then we just try to keep them on a field goal range. What do you want to do? What does everybody? We can go into overtime right here, or we can go for it. You want to try it? All right, let's try it.
Huntley takes the snap. He'll roll to the right. Pumps, throws. Throws. Broken up, incomplete.
That's the right move.
Thanks.
Love you,
bro. Appreciate that.
That's the right move.
I appreciate that. Thank you. Hey, good fight.
That was Mark Andrews at the end telling him, you know, and it was, by the way, that was Mark Andrews saying, let's win it here. I think he dropped a couple F-bombs in there. Let's win it here. And then Andrews came up to him after the game and said, hey, that was the right call. And as Tyler said, you know, that probably was the right call. You're playing Aaron Rodgers on the other side. Get it. Go for it. Now, they're 0-for-2 in this instance, Lance. But here's the deal, is here's a head coach that wants to get input, not from the general manager, but from the players. Hey, can you do this? Now, what player would say,
yeah,
well, no,
let's kick and just play the odds that our defense will stop them because we've got there's no player. He knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
What do you guys want to do? Go for it or not? Every player grew up playing Madden. Name a player who ever punted on Madden. Probably no one ever.
Ever. You just so
Snacks to this day just cannot understand. And Snacks is not analytics director material, trust me. But he just can't stand punting. Like, why are they punting here? It's 4th and 4. That's not that hard to get us. It's next. They're at their own 31. It's 4th and 4. You punt it. He goes, why? You can't get 5 yards?
Snacks. God, I don't want. Just, listen, I don't want Snacks on the headset with Coach Cully.
No,
okay?
No, that's, you don't want it. He'll be on the headset with Nick Caserio, too. But he won't listen because he doesn't listen to anything we say.
No, he doesn't listen to authority. He's not going to do that.
No. He is
so, I mean, this is, I mean, maybe we're beating a dead horse here, but it's just amazing, amazing to me. Nick, now, listen, I said this one, it's from Jump Street. He's hired Cully because he wants somebody in there that he can control. And boy, is it, this is way over what I thought. I thought, you know what? I'm going to pick the players. I'm going to buy the groceries, and you ain't going to say a word. I just want you to coach them. I just want you to, you know, do everything that I say. But this is worse. Do everything I say during the game? Are you kidding me? This is unbelievable. The thirst for power in this organization that went on between Rick Smith and Bill O'Brien, then Bill O'Brien with Jack Easterby, and the battle. And then Jack Easterby overthrows Bill O'Brien. Now Nick Caserio is in here, and he's so power thirsty that he has to have a head coach where he can actually, as opposed to just controlling the players on the field, he has to control the whole game. What in the hell? What is it about the Houston Texans that makes you so power hungry? It's unbelievable. It is unbelievable where this organization is.
Well, everyone sees a void or a vacuum. What is it? A void in power. And so everyone's trying to fill that space. And it started with Bill O'Brien recognizing if I killed Brian Gain and I did it with the help of Jack Easterby getting to the owner with some of his character charts and his competency charts, I can get what I've always wanted. Because Bill O'Brien was very unhappy with Rick Smith because he thought he was going to have control of the 54, and he didn't get full control. And so he would leak that, oh, Bill O'Brien's considering going to Maryland for this football job, and Bill O'Brien may still be fired even if he gets to the playoff game. That was his camp who leaked that out there. I don't know if you remember that storyline, but that was out there. They were going to the playoffs, and it was intentional because he's trying to – that was his warfare against Rick. And so, you know, for whatever your issues were with Rick Smith, I don't think Rick did a lot of – Rick leaked what he needed to leak, but I didn't think he went out of his way to leak negative OB stuff necessarily. And so OB always wanted that power. When he saw he had a chance against Brian Gain, he took it. And now Nick Caserio is just doing what a New England guy does. All he knows is it's an autocracy. One guy rules them all. One guy sits on the Iron Throne, and that's what he wants to do. Now, he doesn't do the end game. You know, he doesn't do the people managing as a head coach, but he's obviously involved in game management. He's got a background coaching, so he thinks, why else would David Culley be hired, John? Honestly, legitimately, we couldn't really figure that out. It's just because Nick Caserio wants a chance. Do you think that he could have been on headsets telling Eric Bieniemy what he should be doing for game management? Be honest. Do you think that would have ever happened?
Bieniemy? Maybe, yeah. Because he would have been grateful to have his first head coaching job.
Yeah, but
now, how about an actual head coach that has, you know, experience? A head coach would say, get off my headset.
Hold on a second. You think Bieniemy, who had to sit there and play second fiddle to Andy Reid, even sometimes in-game play calling, I don't think he would have been okay with that. I don't think any head coach would be okay with the general manager making the decisions or having input in the decisions. I honestly don't.
I
think David Culley was happy to get that parachute.
I don't know. Well, yeah, right. Well, but Bieniemy would be happy to. And right now, if I'm Bieniemy, I'm a little desperate. I mean, I want a head coaching job. Nobody's giving me. I got no shot at it. I'll do whatever. There's only 32 of these, Lance. And you know what? Okay, you want to be on the headset during the game? Yeah, sure, whatever. I mean, there are some. Now, then there's everybody else that would be like, are you kidding? Get them.
Okay, what would you have done? You've never been a head coach. There's only 32 of them. Would you have been okay? No. John Granato would not have been okay with somebody else telling him what to. You don't even like people telling you to go to break. You would not have been okay.
Aaron, he's telling me, get to break.
You would not have been okay with that at all.
No.
Most grown men are not okay with that. David Culley is just go along to get along, and I feel bad for him that he's admitting that. If it's happening, it's happening. He's getting a great payday. I don't hate it for him. I love it for him, a lifetime coach. Isn't that great for us as an organization and fans of an organization? But what I feel bad for is that the guy admitted out loud that his general manager and Romeo Crennel are the ones going through all the decision-making for game situations. I've never heard of something like that.
No, it's unbelievable.
For a head coach.
All right. 713-780-3776. You've got thoughts on this. I know Kevin was in here before. Anybody who has thoughts on this, you want to get in here, you're more than welcome to do that with us here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. We want you to be the Friday at Klein's, okay? We're going to have our Christmas party at Klein's. You still have time to get to Klein's Jewelry right now and have Mark make you something for her, what it is. Or bring in old jewelry. Mark says, I'll take that, and you take off. I'll give you what you paid for it at the time, so you haven't lost any money on that, and we'll put it towards what you are going to get now. That's how good this guy is, okay? He's unbelievable. So you have zero depreciation on whatever you bought from him. That's unbelievable. What other jeweler is doing that? But Mark is doing that. And listen, if you're looking for whatever it is, he makes it right there, and you're going to get it at a discount price. She might want these designer earrings or designer necklace or designer bracelet, whatever it is that she wants. Well, Mark will make it almost identical. He can make whatever anybody else is out there making, or design it yourself if she's telling you what she wants, or you can pick from whatever he's got in the showcase right now or on the website at KleinsJewelry.com. Get there Friday. We're going to talk about more about this on the other side. But get there Friday and make sure that you are in. Either get it there, what's in stock, or get there today or call them today at 832-316-1388 and get it started so you can pick it up Friday at Klein's Jewelry.
This is The Bench. The Bench on ESPN 97.5.
D-Bag!
Tell them again!
D-Bag!
Stay tuned for more John and Lance coming up in a few minutes.
Can't wait!
You found The Bench on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Now coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
All right, hey, it's the last day for you to get in the Christmas spirit during our 12 Days of Giving. How about this? Nice job by Courtney on this whole thing, Todd and David Gow. He's given $500 matched all 12 days with $500 every day. And here's the last day. It's for Goodwill Houston, whose purpose is to change lives through the power of work. Goodwill Houston educates, trains, and hires individuals with barriers to employment to help them thrive. We're encouraging you, our wonderful listeners, to go to ESPN975.com/12days to give what you can. Great, great, great calls. Goodwill Houston. And David Guy will match the first $500 that we give. So this has been a great campaign. We really appreciate it. Hope it has gotten you into the Christmas spirit. And we're trying to help people during these times. And we're helping Gilbert as well. This Friday, we want you to come out to Klein's and bring something for Gilbert. It's a Gilbert, we're calling it a Gilbert Christmas. He is in a nursing home. He's really depressed. The last time I saw him last week, and you know, he wasn't feeling all that great, and you know, so he's in a bad place right now. We are hoping that we can brighten his Christmas. It'll be maybe his best Christmas ever, getting a surprise with us. Or if you want to bring money, if you want to bring shirts, he's an XL at least, maybe a double X, depending on how big they run. You want to bring hats, his favorite teams. He will wear those. We see him all the time with Texans gear or Astros gear or Rockets gear. So if you want to give and help Gilbert, he's done plenty for us throughout the years. We've been listening to Gilbert for 20 years here. If you've listened to the show, you've known Gilbert for a long time. So we want to make it a bright Christmas for him. So
by the way, don't get your feelings hurt if you give Gilbert something. He goes, "What's this for? Yeah. I don't want this." Because Gilbert sometimes will be brutally honest with
you. Yes, he will.
But no, Gilbert will really be appreciative of all of us making the attempt to show him. And you know what? You know, the old saying, give people flowers while they're alive. In a general sense, let people know you appreciate them. How about just a chance to let Gilbert know you really appreciate him in a time that he really does need it?
Yeah.
I mean, and I know a lot of you have reached out already just saying, "I can't make it, I can't make it." We'll get something figured out. I understand that you can't make it. If you can, just being there will be a big, big deal for Gilbert, just to know that he has people who, you know, who are with him and care about him. And it's kind of Gilbert just calls on the show whenever he calls in. For a while, I thought John got Gilbert in the divorce when I was at a different station. And then I found out that I also got him and that he was splitting time different Christmases. He would go to your house for one Christmas call. Then he would go to my house. And then
it was joint custody.
Yeah. And then Gilbert said, I said, "Gilbert," he was going down his laundry list of celebrities who died, when they died, which, if you don't know, Gilbert is amazing at when celebrities died and also what was the hit song in 19. You usually have to do 70s. He's told us 80s were not a good time for him, so that's a kind of a dark period for him, so we don't ask too much about that. But I said, "You don't know when I'm going to die, do you?" He goes, "2027. I was like, "Oh, my God, that came out fast." Wow.
That's a bad – I'd never want to ask. I'm not asking.
Don't ask. Don't ask. Don't tell.
Right. All right, let's get some calls in here because people do want to talk about this David Culley thing. Those who are just joining us, David Culley admitted that yesterday during his press conference, he admitted that Nick Caserio and Romeo Crennel are on the headsets giving him advice during the game, trying to help him with game decisions. So Albert is up here first. What are your thoughts on this, Albert?
I just kind of wanted to bring this point of view to the table. I know that Lance is talking about you've never heard of anything like that happening before in professional football, but what if Caserio has this bigger scheme of things, trying to hiring Culley as a Band-Aid? I mean, the shelf life of coaches nowadays of an unproducing team is extremely low life. And so what if he just figured, hey, never first time coach, happy to be the job, happy to be the coach here, and kind of just get us, you know, out of, he knew the team was going to be a dumpster fire, and just get us from point A to point B, which is mediocrity, and then kind of hire a bigger name coach then. And, you know, being able to have a newer head coach kind of just rule him the way he wanted to.
I think that that's obvious that that is the plan there, Albert. I mean, that's what the Astros did with Bo Porter. You know, you take the losses, the 100 loss seasons, and then as soon as we start to get good, oh, your record is terrible. We can't have you as our manager. So they had to get rid of him. You know, this is what Steven Silas is going through right now. When they do get good, I wouldn't be surprised at all if they don't go, no. Now we need a coach to look at your record. It's terrible. Same thing is going here. Coach Culley can't. He's not a long-term fixer. He's not a long-term answer. He just hired somebody that he can, you know, he can puppeteer the entire time, this time right now. But Coach Culley is admitting everything out loud. He's using his outside voice and telling everybody what the hell is going on in this. Coach, don't say these things. Don't you understand? I think this is the death knell for Coach. I think this is, you know, his in-game decisions and his inexperience. It's really, you know, it's caught up to him in certain situations. If Caserio's on the headset and he decides not to take the penalty and then punts Lance early in the season, I wonder if he was on the headset then or said, okay, I got to get on the headset now because we can't have this stuff. I wonder
now what, that is what I wondered too. Is yeah. If something early in the season or preseason, if something early led Nick Caserio to say, my guess is Nick saw this as an opportunity anyway, where he was going to be hands-on. Maybe it went even beyond that. Once he saw one or two bad decisions, he thought, okay, this is perfect. I can jump in here. And Nick probably doesn't want to lose games either. Nick wants to win. So now, Nick was a former coach. He was a former assistant coach, and he comes from the Bill Belichick model of I'm in charge of everything, and Nick was his right-hand man. So Are you totally surprised? I'm not totally surprised this is going on, but I was surprised to hear it.
Yeah, I'm surprised to hear it, too. No, it's not totally surprising. Not at all. Yeah, I wonder, maybe because, listen, we saw Caserio out there coaching during training camp, remember? I mean, he's out there coaching guys up during training camp, so maybe he has been on the headset the whole time. But I can't imagine if that decision early in the season when Culley didn't take the penalty and then punted, I would imagine that made Caserio nuts, made him nuts. All right, when we got a break here because we've got Mark Ross joining us on the other side. Sorry, Chuck, we'll get you in after we got Mark Ross.
Mark Ross, vice president of football operations for the Giants, and I ask him about this stuff. He's like, what?
Yeah.
No, so, this isn't normal.
No, this is not normal at all. We will talk to him, and he's also XFL. We'll find out when the Roughnecks start back up, baby. When are we getting our Roughnecks back right here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5? Right now, we're going to take a break, and Mark Ross joins us on the other side. Don't go anywhere.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.